welcome to episode, wait, what number? 500?
500!
Of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. Ah, Josh, I forgot. Oh, we totally should have resurrected the old intro for this, where we talk about Windows Media Center.
So much of this show's history, Windows Media Center. And we're going to talk a lot about Windows Media Center tonight.
Including news.
Right. The only news story we are going to cover tonight is actual, legit Windows Media Center news from October of 2019.
Crazy.
It's kind of nuts. I'm in case you couldn't tell, I'm really excited about this. It's been like slowly building for me. A couple of weeks ago, I was like, wow, like 500? It's kind of crazy. You know, when a few days, it's like, man, that's kind of cool. And like today, I'm just like, I am so excited for the show. So excited for this. And not because of me, not because of you, Richard, but because of the same thing that has made me excited about this for almost 500 episodes. I haven't been on at 500 either. But for all of the episodes that I've done of Entertainment 2.0, the thing that has always made me the most excited is the community. It's the people. Mm-hmm. And you people who are out there listening now, you're going to make up most of this episode. We got a bunch of great feedback from you listeners sharing with us what your home theaters have looked like over the last 11 years.
Oh, yeah.
Or more in some cases.
Yes. Y'all delivered.
That we've been doing the show. Like, there weren't any emotional emails. You know, no one wrote anything that was super like trying to make us cry or anything like that. But, you know, I was reading through these again tonight and like getting a little bit emotional just at the fact that like we've been sharing in this experience with all of these people for 11 years. Yeah. And that's pretty awesome.
Amazing. That is absolutely amazing. I was getting emotional too. I was getting angry when I remembered how much I had invested and other consumers had invested in HD DVD. But we'll get there.
That does factor into the show at least once or twice tonight. So, yeah. So we asked you all to write in or to send in some audio clips, some voice memos, if you will, to share with the rest of us so that we wouldn't have to read everything. And a couple of you did indeed share a couple of voice memos for us. So that's where we're going to start. Maybe we should like intersperse them to save our voices, but that's not fun.
Nope.
We're just going to do it now. So I'm going to click play. This is maybe the most prolific commenter on this show over the last 2 years.
I wonder who that would be.
Yeah, I'm not sure. So we'll see. It'll be pretty obvious right away. Here we go.
Ahoy there, you landlubbers. This is Captain Longpaw with a tale to tell. Back in 2008, I was rocking a Zenith 27-inch television, an RCA surround sound, an Xbox Original with an Xbox 360, an NES, mainly used to play Paperboy, and I had a Samsung DVD VHS combo. Oh, I also had a VHS rewinder. You always needed one of those. So now, today, I use an Xbox One X for everything media related. I have a 65-inch OLED LG television, a lot better than the old Zenith. And I still have the DVD VHS combo. And it is not hooked up, but it's in my entertainment system, so it counts. Other than that, I have upgraded surround sound. So now I actually have a powered sub instead of the old RCA two-wired sub. And that is my entertainment system. Hope you enjoyed.
All right. Thank you, Captain Lawn Paul. I would have been, frankly, a little disappointed if we wouldn't have heard from Paul tonight.
Oh, come on. We knew that that was going to happen. I was worried that it was going to be really, really long, but he did so well keeping it under the limit. First off, I have to say I have TV envy because your OLED is bigger than my OLED, and that just really pisses me off.
I'm jealous too. I mean, I like my 4K TV, but mine's not an OLED, so I'm impressed.
Josh,
that's quite a jump.
I think he's the only person who mentioned VHS. Now, keep in mind, this is at the end of videotape life because we were already at the point where we were bringing in HD video on discs, but it reminded me that when I moved into my current house, I decided, you know what? It would be fun to just hook up the old VHS player and see what happens. And what happened was that the first tape I put in it got stuck immediately. So probably that little rubber driver wheel ended up gumming up as rubber does over years. Right. And ended up snagging the tape. And yeah, so now I have a dead tape stuck in it VCR.
I hope you didn't put like your favorite movie in there to test.
No, I didn't. No, actually, it's funny you say that. I put like a music videos thing in and I thought about it. And I'm like, well, damn, I'm glad I didn't put anything in there that I really wanted to convert.
Right.
Which isn't going to happen now anyway.
Yeah. I mean, why would you? Why would you? That's terrible. Yeah. Paul's mention of VHS was the only mention of VHS, and it does make sense. I mean, DVD had been around for close to a decade in 2008, so that's not really that surprising. All right, one more audio clip from you, or for all of you, and this is going to be a very, very familiar voice for you all.
Hello, Josh. Hello, Richard. This is your friend and occasional podcasting guest, Rav H. from AV Rant. Congratulations on reaching 500 episodes of Entertainment 2.0. That is quite a milestone and a testament to your dedication and love of all things movies, music, shows, and games. So back in 2008, my home theater setup was in the living room of my rented apartment. I was rocking a 50-inch Samsung plasma with 1366x768. 68 resolution, you remember those? And a 5.1 surround sound setup with energy speakers, an Onkyo receiver, and one, yes, only one, shoe subwoofer at the time. I was mostly watching cable TV with standard def and DVDs from a fancy schmancy progressive scan Toshiba DVD player. But that all changed when Walmart ran a crazy sale offering one of Toshiba's HD DVD players for only $99. No such sale was running in Canada, so I drove down to Bellingham in the wee hours of the morning, and I stayed up all night at the 24-hour Walmart playing Guitar Hero 2 on their in-store display and getting a crick in my neck because the display was way up high, all just to keep from falling asleep, and there actually wound up being a lineup of about a dozen people for those HD DVD players. I was first in line, and I bought everybody some bottles of OJ just to start the morning off on a happy note. So Batman Begins was the first thing I ever watched in high definition. It was 1080p on the disc. That was being downscaled but to 720p by the player and then upscaled to 1366x768 by my plasma. Honestly, I was disappointed at the very first scene of that movie when it really didn't look significantly better than the standard DVD. But when Bruce Wayne was rolling around in the mud in that Bhutanese prison, that's where I could really notice all the extra detail and clarity. So when the HD DVD format was dying and all my local video rental stores, which were still around at the time, they were selling off all their stock for $2 or $3 a disc, I amassed a HD DVD library of about 150 titles that I can still watch today, thanks to the fact that MakeMKV has the ability to back up that format, and the fact that the Xbox 360 HD DVD drive can work with pretty much any PC with a simple driver installation. So all of those HD DVD titles, they sit right beside my Blu-rays and now my Ultra HD Blu-rays, which are backed up onto three Synology NAS units with an NVIDIA Shield handling all of that via Plex. For the future, I'm excited that OLED manufacturing is ramping up. That means prices are going to come down and more people are going to get to enjoy the remarkable picture quality that OLED TVs offer. I'm also very pleased that Dolby Atmos is proliferating. After all, I need more content to play on my 11 ribbon tweeter speakers and 2 4-foot tall cylinder subwoofers now. So I'm sorry this went over 2 minutes, but congratulations again. And here is to 500 more episodes. Take care, guys.
So much to unpack there. So I too, like I mentioned, got sucked into the HD DVD thing. I didn't buy 150 discs for sure. One of the things that I did, and I'm so glad I did this, was that I started really focusing on buying the discs that had DVD on one side and HD DVD on the other, so that if HD DVD failed, because it was uncertain what would happen, right, that I would have a backup that I could still play. And, you know, he mentioned that MakeMKV can back up the HD DVD discs, but honestly, my experience with that has not been good. Whatever reason, they end up looking kind of jerky, and I've never really been able to get a good re-encode from those or whatever you call it. I've just never been able to get a good rip from those. So yeah, the other thing, Josh, he said the first HD title that he ever watched on media, what was yours?
boy, I have no idea.
I'm assuming it was a Blu-ray, right?
Yes. So if we're talking Blu-ray in my house, then it was probably Cars, the Pixar movie.
Oh, good pick.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good pick. Mine was Serenity.
Oh.
On HD DVD.
Wow. Very cool. Very cool. So Rob goes from, like, it's hard to imagine Rob ever having just one subwoofer, right? I kind of figured he was born holding two subwoofers. But wow, now he's got 2 4-foot tall subwoofers. That's crazy. Rob, a special thanks to you and your message. It means a lot coming from Rob, because they've done well over 500 episodes of AV Rant podcast. So if you're really into AV stuff, home theater, projection, really hardcore speaker stuff, and you're not already listening to the AV Rant podcast, you should go and check them out. It's a great show. They're over 600 episodes on their show. So go and check that out for sure. And Rob, thank you so much for sending in that voice memo. The rest of these are going to kind of be in random order. I just kind of went through our inbox and started adding notes. I'm not going to read anyone's message word for word, because they were all fairly long, which is good. Like, I enjoyed reading them, but it would take us forever to read all of these word for word. So we're basically going to summarize a bunch of these. And we're going to start with Jose. Jose is someone who's been listening for a while. He's been a podcaster in the past. I don't think he currently has a podcast, but he's been in that game before. And he said he's been listening since Adam was around. Adam Thursby started this show back in 2008 all by himself before I joined. You know, I couldn't find this specifically. I don't know exactly when I joined. I think it was episode 16 in early 2009, but I don't know for sure. So that's how long Jose has been listening. And he said he started with a Windows XP Media Center computer with a DirecTV set-top box connected directly to the computer via composite cables. So that's impressive. Like, he had a computer with RCA jacks on it mm-hmm. that he bought that way. He then eventually moved on to the original ATI cable card tuners. I had honestly forgotten about those things before I read this message from Jose. Those things, like, you could only use them with certain computers that came like with authorized firmware or whatever. And I know that Dell made some.
They were so, so persnickety. It was ridiculous. Yes.
Yeah, the tuner itself, I think, was $300, and that was for one tuner.
Yep,
just one. Yeah. So he eventually moved on to those ATI cable card tuners. Then, like so many others, switched to the Seton tuners once they came out. Then started ripping DVDs to Media Browser and My Movies. Man, we talked a lot about Media Browser on this show back in 2009, 2010. Yep. We had the developers from Media Browser on one of the early episodes. We talked a lot about Media Browser. If you don't remember it, it's because it's not even called Media Browser anymore. It's called MB, EMBY, because it used to just be the initials MB, and now it's MB. Mm-hmm. So if you didn't know that. Also, My Movies, another big, really popular Windows Media Center plugin that we talked a ton about on the show. But then he said in 2015, he bought a new house, and while trying to keep his girlfriend happy, he decided to scrap all of that stuff and he switched to TiVo.
Nice. I like me some TiVo.
Yeah, TiVo with TiVo minis. And he never went back to Windows Media Center. Now, at that point, 2015.
Yep.
That's a lot of people had given up on Media Center by then. Windows 7 is practically dead at that point. Like, you know, most people have moved on to Windows 10. That's when Windows 10 came out in July of 2015. So he didn't have a whole lot of other options at that point. So he's on TiVo's now, never went back to Media Center.
I can forgive all of that. This next thing, I don't know, Josh.
I know. This made me almost not want to include his message. Now, Jose doesn't even have a sound bar. He's using TV speakers, the built-in speakers in his TV for watching things.
It hurts my heart.
It really does. It really, really does. But he says, congratulations once again. Thank you for your massive contributions to this community. I know it takes a lot of time and effort week in and week out. So rather than say something like, here's to another 500, I will simply look forward to 501, 502, 503. Jose, I love that attitude. Thank you. Thank you so much for that. Thank you for the message. And thank you for that that outlook on just continuing to move forward with all of this.
That's awesome. That is so good. You know, it's interesting. I think the ATI cable card tuner is the tuner that I had. And I didn't have the first generation, I don't believe. I think I had the second generation because I had one that didn't require that you use it in a specific PC. I had mine in a home build. So I think at one point in time they got past that. But I remember even seeing the original ATI cable card at CES before it was a thing. Like at CES 2006 or 2007, they were showing it off and everybody's like, great, put it out already, okay?
Boy, that's a common theme I think we're going to come back to tonight. There were a lot of products that we felt that way about. All right, we've got another one. This is from John. John has been on the show, I think.
He has. Right? We had him on when we were at a meetup with the Home Server show up in Indianapolis.
Right. So he started with an HD TiVo and with DirecTV immediately after getting it. He said he hacked it so that he would have the ability to pull unencrypted content off of it. He never actually did it, but that wasn't really the point. It was just to be able to. Eventually, he moved on to Comcast, but he said it was literally an unusable DVR. So that's when he switched to Media Center. That's also around the time that he found us, Entertainment 2.0. He found the Home Server Show guys. He found the Average Guy. All of these are podcasts that I think most of our listeners have listened to, or at least in the case of the Average Guy, maybe still do. He says he's still using the same hard drives and Seton Infinity V4 today in a Windows home in a Windows Media Center box right now.
That's
the Infinity V4 came out in like 2011 or something like that. That's really, really impressive. Like, I'm surprised those hard drives are still spinning. You know? So he's still using Media Center. He's already switched to EPG-123 for guide data. We're going to cover that topic a little bit later. He's also been using Plex more lately and thinks that he probably will eventually transition to Plex fully. And he's already using the DVR functionality in Plex and even using the commercial skipping functionality and has actually found it to be pretty successful, unlike my experiments with it.
Yeah.
He said the only thing really holding him back at this point is when Plex might eventually release a grid guide for the Xbox app, because he's using an Xbox One.
Yeah. So let's pause there for a minute there, because there's a lot in there. And, you know, I feel like Plex is the logical heir apparent for many people who have been using Media Center. Obviously, you and I both feel that way. We've been talking about it a ton on the show. Obviously, MB is out there as well, but I don't know that they're really making the inroads that Plex has been making in trying to be the your everything destination, including live TV and DVR and everything else. Now, the problem that I see with Plex, and he says it right there, that if they bring the grid guide to Xbox, come on! Like, seriously, you don't have the grid guide in some of the major devices that are connected to people's TVs. How are you ever going to be the DVR for a home until you get there? I don't get it.
Yeah. Yep. It's got to get there.
So I really feel like, it for me, I don't see how they would ever replace my box that I currently use now, which is the TiVo, unless or until they have a better live TV experience, because it's just still really wonky.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Well, do you want to read the story he has to share?
Yeah. So he shared a story with us, and this is awesome. He says, I have to throw in a story about my first TV calibration going back to around 2000. So remember, one of our most popular articles on the DMZ is a guest post that John wrote about how you can potentially calibrate your own television and why you should be thinking about that. He's the guy on this stuff. He says, I had a Hitachi CRT television. CRTs, remember those? There were test patterns available on Disney DVDs, and when I displayed these, it was apparent how bad the TV's convergence was. A line of text would display three lines of text, one in red, one in green, one in blue. And to fix this, one simply had to remove the back panel from the TV, and while it was on and running, adjust the rings around the big high-voltage tube generating the picture.
I like how he said, simply.
That would do the center of the screen to adjust the edges. There were little wedges that went on the corners of the TV, I think. It's been a long time, but my buddy and I did that while wearing some fireplace gloves for protection and using plastic screwdrivers. I didn't have any sensors or software then, so it was only by eye, but it was good enough that my wife noticed the improvement and I was hooked. Things are so much simpler today.
And safer. Jeez. Well, we're really glad that that wasn't the first and last time that John calibrated a TV.
Yeah, seriously. Jeez. Seriously.
Ah, man, John, stay safe. Please, please stay safe.
Now,
we love you.
Maybe I'm not feeling like, as much as I enjoyed doing the calibration thing, I was like, holy crap, what a pain this is. It took like 2 hours as we're going through all these menus and checking all these settings. And I'm like, yeah, but we're not putting our lives in danger.
Right. Which makes it less fun, really. Maybe we should go back to those.
I don't know about that.
All right, our next message is from Justin. He actually started, and I think this is the only reference to this one, he started with XBMC, that stood for Xbox Media Center, running on an original Xbox.
Which means a hacked Xbox.
Right, right. Because the original Xbox was just a computer in a plastic box that they tried to pretend was a video game console. So It wasn't that hard to hack, and people got XBMC running on it. Now, what I always mess up is the lineage of XBMC. XBMC is what turned into, well, it turned into a bunch of things, didn't it? But Plex is one of them, right? And yeah. Kodi?
I think Kodi is the other one. It was forked a couple of times, and I think both of them came from it. I'm not 100% sure, but I mean, XBMC is just rich lore in this community.
For sure, for sure. So he said around that time, he was upgrading to a new rack mount case. So this is, you know, back in the 2008 timeframe for his setup that at the time had 24 hard drives in it, all of which ranged from 120 to 160 gigabytes. It also had 2 DVD drives in it. So that's 26 drives in this ridiculous case that he moved into some crazy rack mount case. And he had that case until just a few weeks ago. That's how long he's had this thing. And when he migrated those 24 drives, he switched to 1 terabyte drives. So that still means that he had more storage than I've ever had. That's for sure. And then in addition to all of those hard drives, he had a floppy drive and a 250 meg zip drive in there. And we've got a picture, quite a glorious picture of this case.
It's amazing because this picture, first of all, it's a pretty high resolution for the time. Like maybe it's not that old, actually, the picture itself. But, it ended up expanding to the whole width of the email message itself. And I'm scrolling down, and there's bay after bay after bay of hard drives in there.
Right.
Like, holy crap.
Yeah, it was impressive. We'll have photos and links to some of the photos that we'll mention, of course, in the show notes for everyone to check out later. All right, next one. This is from Josh Schenkel, who is in the live chat tonight. I'm going to use his last name because he's been on multiple episodes of the show. He's been a guest contributor of the site, so I think I can safely use his full name. He was on episodes 37 and 45, so well before you joined, Richard. He's been around for a long, long time. He said he started using Windows Media Center around 2005, and he eventually built it up to have 4 OTA and 4 analog tuners, all connected to a 120-inch screen with a Panasonic 1080p projector. I mean, I remember thinking about, wow, 1080p, that must be great. I felt like I was the last person in the world to get an HDTV. He also had a 6 terabyte Windows home server. I can't believe we're going this long into the show before we're actually mentioning Windows Home Server. Like, Windows Media Center and Windows Home Server were like peanut butter and jelly. If you had one, you almost definitely had the other, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's interesting too, right? Because that kind of tells you who the audience was for Media Center. This was not your average homeowner like Microsoft wanted it to be. These were your geeks.
Right? Absolutely. Absolutely. In 2013, he moved, and so that meant kind of redoing everything. Out went the home theater PC, out went the 1080p projector, and in came TiVos and a Panasonic ZT65 plasma. One of the last great plasmas, and it was the last of this particular plasma available in his area. Now, he says, he mostly streams media. He uses his TiVo for TV, and he watches his ripped Blu-rays through Plex, another mention of Plex, on an NVIDIA Shield. So, yeah, Josh Schenkel is a guy who I've always been admiring his setup from a distance. Like, he's always had like four times as many tuners as me, you know, like exponentially more storage than me. He's always had a pretty impressive setup. So, interesting to see that he's also on TiVo. So cool.
And cool. I'm pissed because he has a bigger Panasonic plasma than I do too. Why does everybody have bigger TVs than I have? I don't know what that's about. Well, I know what it's about. I don't have the room for a bigger TV.
Weird furniture. That's your problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Josh is in the chat, and he says that at one time he had 16 tuners. So that's crazy. I don't know how you record that much stuff.
To remember that from an email message or something like that. Because yeah. I know we've talked about that before.
All right. This next message, Richard, this I feel is more in your spectrum of knowledge. I had to actually look up some of these things because I had no idea what they were. This one is from Brian. In 2008, he had a 40-inch 1080p LCD, which like nowadays sounds like nothing, but in 2008 was a pretty big deal. He had a Windows XP Media Center Edition TV, or computer, I mean, with two Hapag HD tuners. This is where I start losing it. He had a Xantix IR distribution system. Now, I started to look up some of this stuff. This is like whole home automation, like super high-end level stuff. Like when I think of bringing in Control 4 type things.
Yeah, but this was marketed, if I remember correctly. I think this was one of the systems that was marketed toward the DIY community through companies like smarthome.com, where you could buy those products that were just on that gray edge of the professional space.
Yeah. He also bested Rob H. in 2008. He had a 5.2 surround sound setup. Oh. He had two subwoofers before Rob H. had
Rob,
two subwoofers.
I am so disappointed now.
Rob is sitting somewhere north of the border crying to himself right now. To go along with his Windows Media Center PC, he was using an Xbox 360 as a Media Center extender.
Yep.
And I had forgotten this was the thing, was a subscriber to the Blockbuster DVD mail subscription service, getting three discs at a time and using Amazon Video on demand for his streaming video.
I totally forgot about the Blockbuster DVD. They were really trying to compete with Netflix.
Yeah. Yep. Didn't work out all that well for him.
A little too late.
Yeah. He calls himself a longtime cord cutter who's estimates he's saved over $10,000 from being a cord cutter over the last 10 years. And frankly, that's probably on the low side.
Okay. I'll give you that. People... But look at all this hardware you're talking about.
Well, just wait until we get to the stuff he's got now. He says, I've graduated to a more feature-rich and reliable system based on the URC MRX10 controller, which provides programming functions for infrared, RS-232, IP, and Z-Wave, and I'm amazed by how far we've come since the early days of X10. This was another device I had to look up, Richard. I X10. Had no idea what this thing was.
Well, I mean, URC pretty much makes everybody's remote nowadays, but in the day, they had a lot of their own branded stuff too, and this I think is one that has been more popular over the years. This is really cool, and you know it's funny because I, of course, being on this show and being the host of Home On, am always looking at the kind of integration of home theater with smart home, and I love it when people find good devices that help them do that in a logical way and not just something gimmicky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very, very cool. Well, I have to ask, did you ever try IR distribution, Josh? Did you ever like have to deal with stuff in a cabinet and, you know, beyond just like the blaster that might have come with your, I don't know, your VCR for your cable box or something like that?
The only thing I've ever had to do is IR blasters for Windows Media Center. I've never had to do anything more complicated than that.
Yeah. And do you mean IR blasters or IR receivers? You mean an IR blaster?
I do mean an IR blaster to control my cable box to blast it into an analog tuner.
Oh, that's right. We did have to do that, didn't we?
Yeah, right.
I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, if you didn't have cable card, that's how you got cable into your Windows Media Center PC.
Well, sort of. And we'll talk about that a little bit more when we talk about my entertainment center. But okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. All right. We have one more listener message, and this is from Steve. He also started with a Windows XP Media Center computer. We're going to post a few links to pictures because Steve had a pretty nice setup and documented it really well with some really pretty pictures. He also, in addition to just having an XP Media Center computer, had a touchscreen controller computery thing that he built for this. And this is back in the mid-2000s. Like, you couldn't just pull out an iPad and control these things back then. So that was pretty special back then. Here's another thing that I've never heard of anyone doing before. And I don't know how he did it, but he was somehow able to output the video from his Media Center PC to a TV channel in his house to broadcast all of the TVs in his house. I don't even know how that works, but he's got pictures of it on all of these TVs all around his house, all from one computer. I mean, it means that everybody needs to watch the same thing, but that's kind of amazing. No clue how he did it. Eventually, he moved on to Windows Vista with extenders. That's when Windows Media Center extenders became a thing. Moved on to QAM tuners. Those were cable tuners, unencrypted cable tuners, and using MyMovies. He really went big in 2009 with Windows 7 Ultimate, not just Home Premium. That's all you needed for Media Center. He went all the way to Windows 7 Ultimate, probably because he wanted those Ultimate extras, right? All those great Windows 7 Ultimate extras.
Yeah, those screensavers, baby.
And then he eventually had two Seton Infinity V4 cable card tuners. And then instead of doing that crazy setup where he was somehow broadcasting his Media Center all over the place, put Xbox 360s all over the house. And as I was thinking about this more tonight, like, that wasn't a small ordeal. Xbox 360s were loud. They were gigantic. Yep. They didn't have Wi-Fi built in. So you had to have Ethernet everywhere or come up with terrible Wi-Fi solutions mm-hmm. for them. Like, that wasn't an easy thing to get Xboxes all over the place.
Nope.
In 2012, he switched over to an HD Home Run Prime and Windows 8.1 Media Center, started using Plex around that time, and was using Media Buddy, another Windows program that would take Windows Media Center recordings and then strip out the commercials, and he would put those into his Plex library.
And Plex was still pretty raw in 2012.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was good, but it was not the polished experience that it is now. And he says, most important, now he's on TiVo, like so many other people who've written in. He's now back on TiVo for live TV and DVR and is still using Plex for all of his other media. And he wraps up by saying, most importantly, I've been with you guys every step of the way. Here's to another 500 episodes of Entertainment 2.0. And the thing that I really want to point out here is when he says you guys, he might mean me and Richard, but he really means all of you, because we've all been in this together. Like, I think that all of these messages that we've read through have really pointed that out, that this is not just a bunch of people tuning in every week to hear about the crazy things that Richard and I have been doing, or that Adam Thursby was doing, or James Montemagno, or Chris Barnes, or all of the people who have been on the show for 500 episodes. This is a community effort, and we've all been in this for 11 years or more. So it's been super, super awesome. Richard, you wanted to add one more from the chat tonight?
I did. Well, a lot of people have been talking in the chat tonight about the things that they've been using, and a lot of people remembering as we're talking about it, oh yeah, I used MB, or yeah, Media Browser was the thing at the time, or wow, it's been like, you know, 7 years since I started using Plex. Well, someone in the chat had said, hey, I forgot to send in information. I said, well, hey, post it up in the chat. And now, do you know who this person is, Oregon Donor 78?
Yeah, you've actually met him. We met him at one of the home server show meetups.
Okay, that's awesome.
Multiple home server show meetups.
I don't know a name to associate this to, and I don't want to assume that's okay to say one. But... Right. He says, I was rocking an old i3 with a Seton TV4 and an Xbox 360 as an extender. Again, that's a common theme we're hearing here. And then bought into the Seton Echo. Oh, he's the first person to mention the Echo.
Yeah.
I have one in a drawer somewhere. I never actually used it. I think you used yours, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. For a little bit.
Yeah, I never actually used mine. And then he says, I'm still using a PC with power DVD and Blu-ray discs, which is freaking awesome. And an NVIDIA Shield, and he's been using MB since Media Browser 2.
Yeah, that's a long time. That's a really long time.
Yes. Yes,
it is. I'm also really curious, what version of Power DVD are you using? Because that was the thing with Power DVD. It's like every 6 months they're like, well, time to drop another $80 on the new version of Power DVD. Come on. I'm sick of giving you people all that money. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's funny, I used the other one. I forget what the competing product was called, but I used it because it supported HD DVD, and they held out for about 2 years of releases after HD DVD was gone, and they still supported it, and then they stopped supporting it, and that's when I kind of stopped trying to play discs on my media center.
Mm-hmm. Josh Schenkel, who goes by UMDivix in the chat, asks, who remembers the Linksys DMA 2100 and 2200? Those were the two of, I think there were only three, and that those were two of the official Windows Media Center extenders. I had a DMA 2100 for test, like for review. It was a nice device. It was a really nice device. It wasn't quite as powerful as an Xbox 360, mm-hmm. but it was stable, and I'm pretty sure it had Wi-Fi built in. So it had a couple of pretty big advantages over an Xbox 360.
Mm.
So
yeah,
I've got a lot of old gear that is surrounding me right now.
Yeah, so you and I took very different approaches toward talking about our past media centers. You're basically doing show and tell.
I figured I would talk a little bit about mine, but I wanted to just bring up random devices and actually show some of them, because I'm amazed by how many of these devices I still had sitting in closets tonight. So why don't we cover your stuff first, and then we'll talk about my setup and go on a crazy history voyage through all of these old devices that I bet a lot of people don't remember some of these things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, 2008. In 2008, I, as you reminded me, was rocking Media Center on Windows Vista, which, by the way, was my favorite version of Media Center ever. And there were a lot of reasons that I think that it was probably better than the version that came after it in Windows 7, not the least of which is that in Windows Vista, they introduced the idea that you could add custom tiles to specific media bars. So you could have music apps that you added into the media or into the music row, and movies apps that you added to the movies row, and TV and so on. And I thought that that was really smart, and they completely got rid of that in Windows 7 for some reason. I don't know why. Well, because that's what they do. They get rid of stuff. But I like that a lot. And I think, I don't know if the timing is right on this, but I think that I was running this on a home-built home theater PC that I bought from our friend Dan Skaggs. And he'll probably correct me if I'm wrong on that, because he's probably going to remember the timing on that better than I do. But it was definitely a home-built home theater PC. And at some point in time, I ended up buying Dan's old case and taking that over and using that. And that was an awesome, like, stainless steel case, all silver and everything. That was in the day when it was cool to have silver components again. There was, I think, like 4 years where everything went silver and then it all went black again. And it was just on the end of that. So I loved rocking the silver. Now, I also, if I remember correctly, wasn't Vista the last version of Media Center that allowed you to play movies from folder structures?
Like, I never did that.
You never did that? Really?
Because no, I never cared about special features and all that junk. I just want to watch the movie, Richard.
Well, see, because I'm somewhat OCD and you know, I think I've used the term completionist before, I like to have everything available. And so the disc rips let me do that. And I had them all out on my Drobo, first generation Drobo, by the way.
Nice.
Yeah. And I had to replace the fan in that one, too, because all Drobo fans eventually die. But it was a really nice setup. I liked it a lot. And at the time I played with Media Browser, I wanted to see what that was like. So I was trying that out. And I tried Plex and I didn't really like it that much. It was too far from the Media Center experience. And what I loved about Media Center was the experience. So I didn't want stuff that was going to take me out of that experience. Now, I have a couple things here that are a little bit weird. Here, I didn't hear anyone say this, and I'm really excited about this. I actually had a FireWire connection from my cable box to my Media Center PC that allowed me to record TV off of my cable box.
That was like a unicorn setup back then.
Yeah,
that was, it was. That was a really impressive setup.
It was. And it was in this tiny little window before cable card where in order to require providers to allow you to record content yourself with third-party devices, the FCC had requested that providers offer some mechanism, and FireWire was the standard at the time, for doing that, for getting the stream of the content. And it was only available, if I remember correctly, on the unprotected channels, but I was also lucky enough that I had largely unprotected channels, because I had, in addition to this, shortly after this, I ended up buying the HD Home Run that I see. Well, right now, as I look at you, Josh, it looks like it's coming out of your left ear. But the HD Home Run, the original HD Home Run that recorded stuff over the air, also allowed you to record QAM.
Right.
And my cable provider had almost all of the channels in clear QAM, except for the premiums. So I was able eventually to replace that FireWire and do it all through that box, which was really nice. Now, I also had a bunch of what I would consider accessories in my media center, in my entertainment center, not just my media center. I had two multi-hundred DVD carousels, a 300 and a 400 disc Sony DVD carousel.
Yeah, that's amazing. Like, who had those? Just you. pretty much only you.
I loved those. They were awesome. The problem was, it was a pain in the ass to find a disc. I also had a printed out index of all the movies that I had with instructions on how to switch to the carousel that had that disc on it and then select that disc and play it.
Please tell me it was laminated.
Well, it was in those little sleeves, of course. of course it was.
Of course.
And it had little movie thumbnails. I also had a Sony FireWire DVD carousel that was specifically built to work with Sony's, I don't want to call it proprietary, but Sony's flavor of a Media Center PC.
Wow.
And I never really used it because it was kind of a pain in the butt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it had a little slot in it, and you could only control it through the computer, and it was really wonky. Sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. It was a really cool concept, not well executed. I had the first TiVo HD around this time, and that, another product that waited too long to come out, but eventually they had that product out, so that I had the TiVo HD. I hadn't even put this on the list before, but I started thinking about it. What TV did I have at the time? I had one of those short throw, like 1 foot deep projection TVs that would sit on an entertainment center, but it was like an internal projection with a DLP chip. And I think it was 50 inches. And I think, if I remember correctly, it was an LG TV. And from that, I ended up changing that to buying the plasma. That the plasma is what I ended up going to when I got rid of that. I had a first gen Apple TV also that year. I couldn't believe this was the same year. Like, I was looking through all of this stuff for when it came out. I'm like, oh my God, that was also in my entertainment center. I still have that, by the way, and I'm convinced you could still cook eggs on it. It gets that hot.
Wow.
And I had the Harmony one, which I still to this day believe is the best ergonomic remote that Harmony ever had, or I should say that Logitech ever made under the Harmony brand.
Yeah.
Fantastic, fantastic remote. I loved it. And then finally, one thing that wasn't...
I don't think we've had more agreement from the chat room tonight than on that.
Yeah.
We've got people yelling, yes,
yeah.
Preach.
Seriously. Really? It was a fantastic, fantastic remote. I loved that thing. And then outside of my entertainment center, but kind of along those lines, I know I've talked about this in the past, but it's something that when I think about it, I'm like, oh yeah, I did have that setup. That was pretty cool. I ended up buying a 7-inch touchscreen that was designed to work. I think it was, I don't know, maybe a little bit larger than VGA, like maybe 800 by 600 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was designed to be used in a car, but I had it mounted off a cabinet in my kitchen, and I had it hooked up to a media center PC in my basement solely for the purpose of being a jukebox selection device.
Right.
And Media Center was an amazing interface for music selection.
And it was so good on touchscreens.
Oh, it was fantastic on touchscreens.
If I remember correctly, this little touchscreen kitchen Media Center thing is what first got you on this show.
Actually, no.
Am I wrong about that?
You're wrong about that. What first got me on the show was a post I wrote when Silicon Dust announced the HD Home Run Prime.
Oh.
And I believe, if I remember it correctly, I wrote about that as cable card's last best hope.
You weren't wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. How about that? Kind of crazy, huh?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
But wasn't your first email message into the show about your kitchen computer
That is entirely possible. Yes. Okay. That is entirely possible. But the first thing that I ever wrote for you guys, and the first time I ever came on the show, was to talk about that post about the HD Home Run Prime.
Okay. Cool. Very cool. Some impressive gear there.
There's a lot of old stuff there.
I know, but it's all way more impressive than what I'm about to talk about.
Oh, I don't know about that. You brought yours to the show.
Well, I have cool stuff to show that came later, but what I was using in the 2008 time frame was not impressive at all. So, like everybody else around that time, Windows Vista Media Center running on a custom built box, which was like, I don't remember exactly the processor, but it was one of those early AMD 64-bit processors that seemed so cool at the time. And it had a hybrid tuner in it. I actually have, pretty sure this is it.
Here's where we start reaching for stuff.
Right.
This is like, if anyone watches Daily Tech News Show, this is like Tom, who always has like his legacy devices within reach, no matter what they're talking about.
This might not be it, but it was a similar device. This is a PCI, because this one is PCI Express. No, it's not PCI Express, but it's little PCI. But it was a dual, it was a hybrid tuner, is what they called them back then, where it had one analog tuner and one digital OTA tuner. So I had an antenna, had the clear QAM thing going on in my house all through Vista. It was pretty good. And then also bought an Xbox 360. And one of the main reasons I became an Xbox guy was so that I could have a Windows Media Center extender. That was it. That was like the deciding point between getting an Xbox 360 and a PlayStation 3 was, this thing's a Media Center extender, and Media Center is pretty fun, so I'm going to buy that instead.
That was really such a smart move for them at the time.
It really was. It really, really was. So that was it from that side. And then on the TV side, when all of this first started, I wasn't HD. I had a 27-inch, I don't even remember the brand. It was nice, but it was a 27-inch CRT standard def TV. I've still got pictures. I've got pictures of my oldest daughter as a baby sitting in front of that TV with Media Center up on the screen.
That's awesome.
Because I'm a freaking nerd. So that was where it all started for me. My first HD TV, this is the crazy thing. It was an HD, 16:9 Samsung plasma. But here's the resolution. Remember, 16:9, 1024x768.
Yeah.
Because it had rectangular pixels.
Yep.
It was so weird. It was so weird.
Yep. My first plasma had that. I had the Sony 27-inch plasma when it came out. I don't even want to think about how much money I spent for that. And it had a 1024x1024 resolution.
That's a really weird one.
Is that crazy?
Super weird.
It was
super
not weird. High def. This was pre-high def, but it was intentionally widescreen to be able to accommodate letterbox content because all of the DVDs and stuff like that you could play on it. And it was really weird. It was these strange rectangular pixels, just like you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wanted to go through just some of the things that I found. Some of these, and if you're not in the live chat, which you probably aren't, I'm going to try and get this video up on YouTube so that if you can't remember what some of these devices look like and you just want to take a stroll down memory lane, you'll be able to see these things. But here we go. Here's the show and tell. I don't know what order I'm going to go in here, but I've already showed that crazy little hybrid tuner. I think we have to show the original Seton Infinity V4. And this is like super original. I was one of the lucky few to get an early review model. So I think there are things that are unique about this particular card that weren't even on the one that shipped. So that's kind of cool. And
I love that.
Enormous. It's so
big. I love that. Love it.
So big, so thick. I still love the little cattail dongle thingy for getting the coax cable into it. It was a great card, a really, really great card. I don't have it cleaned up. I do have the external Infinity V6 sitting here also. I've got the box. I didn't take it out of the box, but I do have an HD Home Run Prime. The original HD Home Run Prime is sitting back here.
And I told Josh that I'm putting dibs on it now to put the first bid in if mine dies.
Yeah, because you can't get them anymore. They're hard to find. Here's a device that pretty much everybody listening to the show had.
Yeah, for those people who are just listening, it's this black box with a black thing on the front that just says Microsoft, and it has a big, long USB cable. What do you think that is?
And two jacks
and
on the back
holes
of it.
For blasters.
Right. Right. The Media Center remote control receiver. I didn't find my remote.
That was still in my entertainment center when I went and did some cleanup in there a couple of months ago. Like, I had taken my Media Center PC out of there over a year ago, but that was like, left over and never cleaned out.
Rob says he's still using an HP IR receiver to this day.
They still work.
All right, next up, about the same size, a device we mentioned earlier, the Seton Echo. Seton's attempt at making their own Windows Media Center extender. Really great product, really poor timing.
But I would also say really great product when it worked.
Well, there was there were definitely some flaws on Seton's part. Like, it wasn't always perfectly reliable. And the remote, like, everyone hated the remote. It wasn't great. But it had Ethernet built into the back of it, which was kind of important. It It consumed very little power compared to an Xbox 360. But really, the biggest downside was it came out at the end of the Windows 7 lifecycle.
Yeah, and that was no fault. I was going to say that was no fault of theirs. But what really ended up happening is they kind of got, I don't know if hoodwinked is the right word, but you know, they kind of ended up getting surprised by Microsoft's decisions to just completely pull back from the extender model,
right,
in Windows 8. And because that's roughly the time that this came out, was when Windows 8 came out. Yep. And then further, you know, reinforced by Windows 8 being the last version of Windows Media Center. So yeah, that was bad timing. That was really bad time. What was nice about that box is that it was very performant. Like, one of the things that I noticed as a difference between using it, because I did test it, I never actually used it in day to day, but in testing it, I noticed that it didn't have the same lag that the Xbox had when you used it as an extender, which is ridiculous because the Xbox was a powerhouse.
Right. It was a super powerful video game console. Right. Yeah. All right. Next device. This was another popular one, but I bet a lot of people don't remember. I've got to look on the label at the bottom to remember what it was called. The Hophog HD PVR.
I totally have one of those.
Do you?
Yeah, right, that's how I recorded some of the Xbox videos that I did on our YouTube site.
Nice, nice.
Oh yeah, by the way, we have a YouTube channel thing. There's not much there except for my Home One promos.
Yeah. So this device was unique in that it has component inputs and pass-through. Mm-hmm. So what a lot of people did was got one of these and ran like their DirecTV set-top box through this so that they could record DirecTV.
I forgot
or
about
Dish
that. Yeah.
On to Media Center.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a really, really expensive solution because I think these things were like $250.
Yeah. It was not cheap.
Yeah. And it's just one. It's not a TV tuner. It is a video capture device. So,
for one single device. That is all. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's stick with Hophog. This next device might be the most rare device on the show here. And what a lot of people, I bet, don't even remember existed. So I want to lead into this by saying, been seeing a lot of tech news articles about like all of these cool new computer cases that you can get that look like that fancy new Mac Pro that looks like a cheese grater. Well, Apple clearly stole that design from Hophog with this ridiculous, the ugliest cable card tuner to ever be released. What the heck was this thing called? The WinTV DCR 2650. It took a single cable card. How many tuners do you think this thing had?
It had one.
Well, but how many things could you record at once?
Oh,
it's cable card.
Two.
It was two, right? Two. Why? Cable card could receive six.
Because. Oh, come on, come on. The Seton only did four. I mean, not. Not everybody wants to invest in all of the hardware that's necessary to support each available tuner because you need hardware for each one of them. So I understand that. But this was such a crazy device because it was, first of all, such a piece of crap. I remember when you reviewed this and you were so frustrated by this. And if I remember correctly, aren't the guts of this not even theirs? Isn't the tuner actually someone else's tuner, or the cable card tuner piece someone else's, like Seton's or something?
I think it was from Silicon Dust.
Silicon Dust? Okay.
Yeah.
They were like, let's get good hardware. It wasn't their own.
and then write our own crappy software for it.
Right.
Yeah. It was not good. I didn't go back and look at my review, but oh man. Yeah. That's a gem. That is a real gem.
But you know, I mean, Hophog, at one point in time, Hophog was pretty much it.
Oh yeah.
For any sort of video capture.
Yeah, they really were. They were like when people were first getting into TV tuners in computers, it was probably a PCI Hophog tuner.
Mm-hmm. By the way, that's because we've been talking about it so long. That's why we know how to pronounce it properly.
Right. That random city in New York. Yeah, it's called Hophog, people. Another early one would have been ATI. They had their All in Wonders, or the TV Wonders. This is a ATI TV Wonder dual. I think this one.
I had the single version of that.
OTA or analog, I think.
Yeah. If they had a single version, and I think they did, that predated this, I'm pretty sure I had that too.
Yeah. Yeah. So that
with,
was decent.
With SVGA input.
Oh, yeah. 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 That is what that thing is, I think.
Unless that's a multi-adapter thing. But if I remember correctly, you could input SVGA. So you could have, in addition to your tuners, you could have analog input coming into it that you could record as live streaming.
Right. Yeah. It was like a breakout cable, but it at the very least had like the yellow composite cable plus some other stuff. So yeah, you're right. It did have analog. And then the last one, you already mentioned this earlier, another really hideous device, but absolutely iconic. The original Silicon Dust HD Home Run, dual tuner with two separate coax jacks on the back of it.
This box changed everything.
It really did. It really did. I mean, it was so ugly, but did it get the job done. It wasn't ugly
at the time. It was cool looking at the time.
I don't know. I think I've pretty much always thought this thing was pretty ugly. But it doesn't matter. Like, this stuff goes behind your entertainment center, right? Like, you're not displaying any of this stuff. So it doesn't matter if it's ugly. But like, I had friends who had these who weren't into Media Center PC stuff at all. They were just like, you know, I live in an apartment right after college and you can plug cable into this and watch everything. And like, you know, they had fairly, I mean, it wasn't the prettiest Windows software at the time, but it would scan for channels. And like, if you were on like an apartment complex cable setup and plug into one of these things and you had neighbors who were watching like video on demand movies, like it would show up and you could watch them. It was super crazy, the things that you could do with the original HD Home Run. And man, I don't even know what year this was. This must have been 06, 07?
I don't remember, but I remember seeing their booth, a single table in the sands, which was where like everyone else was at the time at CES, either 2006 or 2007. And all they had was boxes of those piled up on the table because that was their product.
Right.
And it was finally out. It was such a big deal that it was finally out. They had been talking about it for a long time and we were all excited that we were going to be able to get this because ATI was all that we had, basically. ATI, well, and Hophog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they were finally going to bring over the air HD as well as, and again, I know people, maybe some people think of this automatically, but I don't know that everyone does, ClearQuam, which in many cases with many of the providers at the time, also delivered standard NHD content from cable companies.
Mm-hmm.
to your computer.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. It was a game changer for sure. All right. That's it for our memories section. That's it for our walk down memory lane for all of this crazy hardware that I've had sitting in closets in my garage and all this other stuff. And
all right, let's wash that down with a bad news Microsoft chaser.
Well, it's rather fitting, isn't it? Because basically, gosh, like right after we recorded the last episode of this show, people who are still using Windows Media Center started getting pop-ups on their computers. Now, we're talking present day here. We're not talking history anymore. October 2019, people start getting pop-ups on their Windows Media Centers that say, come January 2020, we're not giving you guide data anymore. You're going to have to find it on your own, basically.
With a helpful little link with a button that you could press for more information that took you to a generic support page.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks, Microsoft.
A not helpful at all support page.
Nope, not helpful.
Yeah. So you've got some options, but before we get into those, even the timing of this is not super, super clear. It sounds like you'll have until the end of January 2020. And that's when the guide data will go away. But
I don't know that I'm buying that.
There's a chance that it's going to stop after January 14th.
Yeah. So what I think is going to happen is if they're still giving you 14 days out, you'll basically get up to January 28th. Like on the 14th, it's going to stop after the 14th. And so if you have 2 weeks of data from there, you're good until the end of the month-ish.
Ish, right. And the reason that the January 14th is so important is that's the last day for Windows 7 support, period. Like, we're not just talking about feature fixes and stuff like that. No more updates, period, for Windows 7, including security updates, after January 14th, 2020.
Yep. Unless you're some big enterprise that has old computers and you want to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars of support money on it. Anyone want to do that for Media Center? Anyone? Anyone? Yeah, it's not happening.
No one piping up. Not a word out of our chat room when you ask that question. Yeah. So what options do you have? If you want to stick with Media Center, you do have an option. You actually have multiple options, but probably your best one is there is an app called EPG123, Electronic Program Guide 123. And what it does is it'll take guide data from other sources and convert it into a format that Windows Media Center can use. There are lots of places you can get that. Your best bet is, and this does cost money, is a service called Schedules Direct. It is a $25 a year subscription. So this is not much money. This is not $25 a month. It is $25 a year to get this data. The setup is not very complicated. We've already mentioned it earlier in the show. Lots of people have already done this. It's been around for a while. This is not some new app that someone threw together when this notification popped up on their machine. It's been around for a while. So if you want to stick with Media Center, that's probably what you want to do there. If you're thinking, all right, fine. You finally forced my hand. I'll walk away from Media Center, but I need some help on what it is that I should do next. Well, you've really got quite a few options. You could go to Plex. We've talked about Plex a lot. Plex works pretty well as a DVR, especially if you're doing over-the-air DVR. If you're on cable card, it gets a little trickier because Plex won't do copy-protected cable card recordings, so that's not going to be a great solution for you if you need copy-protected stuff. Another option from the home theater PC perspective is HD Home Runs DVR. That obviously supports all of HD Home Runs tuners. So they're over-the-air tuners and their HD Home Run Prime cable car tuner. So even if it's copy protected stuff, your HBO and Cinemax and Showtime, all of those things can be recorded and watched with HD Home Run DVR on most devices. So that's an option. Your other option that I'd recommend, TiVo. A whole bunch of people have already, we've talked about tonight, have already switched to TiVo. It's your most expensive option, but it's probably the easiest. It's probably the most reliable. It's almost definitely the most reliable because you don't have to maintain a computer or a NAS or external hard drives, like none of that stuff. You don't have to do any of that. You can just use the TiVo. You can stream from a TiVo to tablets and all that stuff. So you've got a lot of flexibility with TiVo that you didn't have 10 years ago when we were doing all of this. It's just expensive. They've got new devices that are out now. We talked about them on the last episode, the TiVo Edge. We haven't gotten our hands on them yet, but there are new devices for cable and for OTA, but the devices themselves are fairly pricey and the subscription is fairly pricey, but it does get you pretty much everything. It's going to get you the absolute best TV experience for live and recorded TV, and it's going to get you most of the apps that you care about, but not all of them. And you even get multi-room set up through TiVo minis and stuff. So those are your options. TiVo, if you want the least fuss, but you're willing to pay for it. Plex, if you want the absolute most flexibility. And HD Home Run DVR, if you don't want TiVo, but you need copy-protected HD cable recordings. So
yeah. So there, I don't know if you've talked about this already, because I had to duck out in the because of the magic of, you know, podcasting. Nobody knew until I said so. But what I don't think you're mentioning is that all of that is an alternative solution if you want to have a copy of the thing that you're recording on-prem. Mm. Because you don't trust that it's going to be out there for you to watch at some other time.
Right.
But nowadays, there are lots of streaming services that give you the equivalent of a TV experience, almost a cable-like TV experience. And some of them do offer DVR services.
Right.
So, you know, those are decent alternatives too. They, of course, come with monthly fees upwards of $50 a month or more. But those are alternatives as well if you don't care so much about having the on-prem horde of content like I have in my home.
Yeah, you could certainly go to Sling TV or YouTube TV, PlayStation View, Hulu with live TV. There's a whole lot of options out there for that too.
Yep. So it's a sad thing because this is like the death knell, right? Like we knew that, yes, you're still going to be able to hobble stuff together if you want to keep using Windows Media Center. But as far as Microsoft is concerned, this is it. They've stopped apologizing. This is the end of the line. And that's really sad. And one of the things that we heard from nearly everyone who wrote in about using Media Center was that they still believe to date that it is the best TV and DVR experience for the home. And I 100% agree with them after using everything from TiVo, after having Apple TV and Roku and Amazon and numerous other TV offerings, 100% Microsoft built the best experience.
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Yeah, it is really sad. You know, we've had a lot to celebrate here. But this really is the death. We've been saying for years that we won't consider Windows Media Center dead until they turn off the guide data. And they're doing it. They're pulling the plug on the guide data. And no, it doesn't mean you have to stop using it. There are other options. But that's it, guys. It's it. Turn off the lights. Microsoft is officially done with this product, a product that I've loved more than maybe any other piece of software that's ever existed.
Wow. I've never really thought of it that way. That's a really cool perspective. Yes. Yes.
I mean, it got me podcasting, for crying out loud.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So here's the cool thing, Josh. We know damn well that people in our community are going to keep using it.
Yep.
And what I hope is that you'll continue to share your experiences with how you are keeping Media Center alive for you in your homes, if that's what still works for you.
Yeah, just be safe, because you're not getting security updates anymore. So you better be real careful with those Windows 7 Media Center PCs, everybody. Be really careful. But that's really going to bring this show to a close. It doesn't bring Entertainment 2.0 to a close, but it is kind of weird, kind of spooky, maybe ironic is the right word, but a little weird that on episode 500 is really the episode that we are saying, goodbye, Media Center. We loved you. We're burying you. You're dead. I'm sad. I really am pretty sad about it.
To us. Not to everybody.
Not to everybody, but it basically is, it really is. Like,
not quite dead yet.
There's people who have hacked it on 8.1 and onto Windows 10 and stuff, but that's all super hacky stuff. And
yep.
It's not something that would be reliable enough for my house. So
yeah, well that's it too, right? Is that those of us who are geeks are willing to put up with a lot of that, but the rest of the family and household, not always quite so much.
Yeah. Yeah. So goodbye, Media Center. We loved you greatly. All right. That's it. We're not going to do any other news. I know there's a lot of news that's happened in the last couple of weeks, but we're already an hour and a half into this. So this is going to be our one special episode. This is not it for Entertainment 2.0. We're not going anywhere. As one of the listeners, I think it was Jose, said earlier, episode 501, it's coming up. It'll be around probably next week. So,
yes, and we should warn people that we anticipate that we're going to have a weird schedule for the next month or so.
It is going to be weird. We're not going to get into all the details, but we'll be back next week for episode 501. We're almost definitely not going to be around the next couple of weeks after that. But that is not the end. We will be back in November after episode 501 next week. We will be back. It's just going to be gone for a couple of weeks while I have to do some crap that sucks. So maybe more details on that later, but probably not. So we will be back. We absolutely will be back. We'll be back next week for episode 501. In the meantime, keep sending us your feedback. Keep sending us your stories. Let us know what you're going to be doing if you're now moving on from Media Center and things like that. There's a lot of ways you can get a hold of us. Twitter, Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. The website is at DigiMediaZone. We're on Facebook. We're pretty much everywhere, Instagram, you know, all that stuff, all of that information, our email address, everything, it's in the show notes over at thedigitalmediazone.com. This isn't even the only podcast that we've got over at the DMZ. Richard, you've got another show called Home On. What's going on with Home On?
I do. So the latest episode is with Joe Selinger from Lifedoor. He has a really cool product that his company makes, and we arranged that episode to come out on or around about Fire Prevention Week, which was intentional. So that's a great episode to listen to if you haven't heard it yet. I think we had a great conversation. He was a fantastic guest. Next up, I'm talking with Steve Savagian. He's the CEO of Anova Culinary. And not surprisingly, since I was just at the Smart Kitchen Summit, we're going to be talking a little bit about that. He was one of the speakers there. And we're going to catch up on some news together and a new announcement from his company. These are the guys that make the sous vide circulator that I am like so hung up on. I love this thing. And they have a cool new smart oven coming out early next year.
Nice. Very nice. All right. Well, we mentioned it a bunch tonight. We do the show live normally Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Follow us on Twitter to know for sure when the live shows are going to happen, because there's video, there's audio, there's a chat room. You fully get to be a part of the show when you show up for the live recording. We'll be back next time for episode 501 for that. But that's going to do it for episode 500.
500!
I can't stop saying 500. He's Richard Gunther. I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.